Hey, Brendan.
Welcome to Late Night, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is actually back for episode 211. You didn't hear episode 211 the last time we tried to record it, because if I posted it, you would only hear my side of episode 211.
Which I still think we should release. But I can understand why you wouldn't want to, because it would make you seem like a madman.
Yes, yes. Because of a technical mix-up on my end, we ended up recording only one microphone of the two microphone show that that is the Not a Thing podcast, and it sounds real weird when one person is just kind of laughing and talking to himself. We're dialed in this week. I'm pretty sure anyway.
We'll find out.
We make no promises. It is a free show.
That is correct. You get what you pay for. And if you'd like a better quality show, you can pay us.
You could. We are still looking for our very first sponsor. We're at episode 211. Still no sponsors.
we'll work for money.
Or no sponsors beyond us, I guess. I mean, we do not only invest our time in it, but also hosting and all that kind of grand jazz. And if you would like to help out with that, or otherwise contribute to the show with ideas or things or being on the air as a guest, you can always tweet at us, Facebook us, go to the notathingpodcast.com webpage and leave us some comments there.
Walk up to our faces and use your words.
Yes, those are definitely things we like having guests on the show. We haven't had a guest in a little while. It wouldn't be maybe if our recording schedule stabilizes a little bit, we'll be able to do that. But a little bit of a programming note coming up soon, possibly next week. I'm not sure. Let's not make that promise yet. But possibly next week, we're going to do our Bakhtun in review, our Bakhtunly episode, looking back at the year that was.
Considering how 2016 has been, that should be an interesting episode.
Yes. So
we'll try to make it not. We won't make it too depressing. We don't like to focus on the negatives.
Right.
Although the things and not the knots.
Yes, exactly. The name of the show is the Not a Thing podcast, but we like things. There are a lot of things that that should be, and there should be less not things. Although we will start with one this week. The House GOP, the House Republicans, House of Representatives, are proposing limits to photography and video streaming from the House chamber floor. This might sound familiar, because I think they essentially did this during the Senate filibuster. Or was it a filibuster? It was just a sit-in, right?
A House sit-in.
It was a House. So the House, they essentially effectively went on strike to get people to actually talk about gun control and institutional racism, and unfortunately, really neither of those things happened. Those still do need to be addressed, but the House Republicans, who you know were in control, turned off the cameras. So the C-SPAN feed from the floor was cut, and so the only way that images and video were coming out from the House floor during that sit-in were from social media feeds and people live streaming and tweeting photos from the House floor and everything else. And so Republicans are trying to limit that. This, I think, falls under the auspices of something that we've talked about actually a bunch of times on the show, of when companies are trying to control the flow of information out of sports teams. We had talked about that with regards to the NFL, and I feel like there was even one more story regarding. Oh, it was the Olympics, when it was the U.S. Olympic Committee. Was trying to limit, photos and streaming unless it was through official channels. And I think if this election cycle has taught us anything, it's that official channels are garbage. And you really have to...
And that people in power don't understand technology.
Yes. You really have to use as many sources as you can and direct sources when possible. And I think you can't get more direct than someone tweeting photos or streaming video from the floor of the chambers of Congress. So this is pretty much not a thing. I'm not going to say it's necessarily censorship, but... But it kind of is. So again, not a thing. First Amendment. Let's you know, it's the first one. Let's at least get that one right.
Well, it'll make it a lot easier to dissolve the Imperial Senate, the Republic Senate, when they build the Death Star.
Oh God, we just have to stop. Just have to stop Galen before he gets the plans together too much, right? We'll get to a couple more aspects of this. We actually are going to talk about quite a lot as we come through. You mentioned talking about people not understanding technology, and this is one of the big ones that I still like throw up a little bit in my mouth every time I say it. President-elect Donald Trump said today, talking about computers and how computers have caused more. I mean, he said it, and it was something like have caused more misunderstandings in the world than solved. Except he said it a lot less eloquently than that, as is his you know normal speech pattern for that. But he's referring especially to some news that came out. From the Obama administration, that the White House is recommending and enforcing an executive order that drops sanctions on Russia, directly for interfering and otherwise meddling with the electoral process. There were numerous, accusations from numerous departments in government, in the U.S. government, pointing to, outright hacking of emails, general meddling with information and other garbage. And it falls under a standing executive order, which was put out when there was a hack of Sony. Do you remember that a while ago? And they were blaming that on North Korea. Mm-hmm. And so it's expanding the sanctions regarding that to Russia and saying that people can be declared, persona non grata, essentially not cool, and then kicked out of whatever organizations they're connected to and potentially kicked out of the United States, having their assets frozen, all sorts of stuff. So
given sanctions, 72 hours to leave.
Wow. So sanctions were imposed on, I think it was 35 people from various posts in that were official to the U.S. And then
the Russian embassy in Washington and the Russian consulate in San Francisco.
Right. Oh, wow. I didn't know there was ones in San Francisco, too. Hmm. But and then it also named the Russian like an information ministry and then the FSB, which is like the successor to the KGB from Russia, declared them essentially not in so many words, but like enemies of the state. So it's ramping up, a fair amount of tension, I think, between the U.S. and Russia that will have to get looked at or dealt with real soon, hopefully, without any kind of like horrible consequences. But I don't know. They also mentioned that there will be an increase in kind of covert action against Russia. So essentially, more spying, more disinformation, more noise.
Cold War 2.0.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
I'm not super looking forward to the Cold War 2.0. Only
no,
because.
Neither am I.
it will, I feel like it becomes even more on the verge of a hot war, which is not good for really anybody.
No, I don't think that's going to happen, though, because Trump is so cozy with the Russians. I mean, the White House just put out these sanctions today. The CIA and the FBI both agreed that it was Russia behind the hacks.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was brought to Donald Trump today, his response was, "We ought to get on with our lives." And I have that quote about computers. He said, "I think that computers have complicated lives very greatly. The whole age of computers, the whole age of computer has made it where nobody knows exactly what's going on." That's so scary.
Yeah. So, you know, guard your information, guard your data, keep
VPNs
an eye
on your friend.
Yeah, keep an eye on everybody that you can keep an eye on. It's gonna be a weird 4 years.
Yeah.
And we haven't even started yet. We're not even, the clock has not even started on his actual presidency, and it's already very, very strange. So so much to talk about probably in the days and weeks and months to come on the Not a Thing podcast. We hope to not turn it into a complete, you know, we don't necessarily want a new segment on the show, because since we're not really doing the Fuck the Police segment anymore, we're kind of trying to focus on more of the positive changes that the that are happening in law enforcement. We don't necessarily want to replace it with a Fuck the GOP segment.
But they're making it real hard not to.
We're going to keep an eye on it as we do. We're not purporting to be a news source, but I think we're going to purport to at least be...
We can be as fair and balanced as Fox News.
they deserve at least that much. The American people, thanks for listening to the Not a Thing podcast. And if you're listening to the Not a Thing podcast, you've most likely downloaded it from some source, or had it downloaded to your device, or streaming it over the internet. Unless you're in one of our houses right now, in which case you're probably still only hearing one half of the conversation, kind of like how last week's show almost went. But if you do want to hear the podcast, you have to be on the internet. And what's happening more and more is that countries are recognizing that the internet is kind of a thing. Go figure. We've only been talking about that for quite a while.
I mean, the president-elect doesn't understand what it is, but...
I mean, the age of computer is upon us. And
the
so...
age of computer.
not a thing. But the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, which is kind of like their FCC, they released a statement classifying high bandwidth internet as a essential resource. They don't go as far as I want to say it was Sweden or I think it was Iceland, because when Iceland remade its constitution, I want to say they reclassified the internet as a human right. I don't think Canada's going that far, but they are saying that high-speed internet is an essential resource, and they are defining high-speed internet at a minimum as 50 megabits per second down and 10 megabits per second up, which is just what I pay for now. That's like, I mean, it's not the highest I could pay. There's certainly more internet that I could buy, but it can actually be really difficult, even in Silicon Valley, to get above 50 megabits per second without paying, you know, your soul away to Comcast, unfortunately. But there are fiber fiber to the home, even connections that are well above 50 megabits. But I would think a lot of people are still just barely getting 50 megabits down. And what Canada is saying that's like a floor that they should shoot for network bandwidth wise, which is kind of wild. We talked about it on the show last, sometime in a insert episode here, where SpaceX was going to launch satellites, or their plan is to launch satellites that would effectively give everyone, I think it was like 1 gigabit per second.
I believe so, yes.
Which is like, 20 times. 20? 200 times.
200 times.
200 times what this floor is for Canada. So I don't know, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, or what the actual kind of internet will be. But I don't know. I still think that's a pretty high number for a floor.
That infrastructure build out is going to be crazy expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, unless Canada's been secretly laying fiber for the last 30 years, which we have not been doing in the United States at all. We've been hanging on to coax and copper for way too long.
Yeah. Yeah. I would remember hearing about companies talking about, dark fiber. So essentially fiber that was dug into the ground and laid between buildings and between, states and everything else, that was just not being used. And I'm sure a lot of that's being used now.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't all being used already and still not giving coverage.
Right. I mean, certainly in the Bay Area, in Silicon Valley, which is, I would say, ridiculous that...
It actually has pretty terrible infrastructure in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. I mean, I think not even just talking like wired internet, just the fact that like I can't get cell reception at my house, it's sad. So I mean, even just cell reception, like there's so much infrastructure that has to get worked in the way. And maybe in Canada they're able to jump through all of these hoops. I don't know enough about the CRTC, or if they have enough kind of juice in the government to actually do something. I feel like the FCC is always at least two steps behind the lobbyists that are running stuff, and so it's rare to see even something as clearly under, or I don't know. I think it's very clearly understood that net neutrality should be a thing. We've talked about that a lot on the show, and that is still kind of a, I don't know, let's see if we can work around it, is the major play from like so many companies. That would be an interesting fight. I think if Canada can kind of push that through, it's really embarrassing for the United States. I mean, there are not as many people living in Canada.
And they're farther apart.
Right. So in theory,
they're going to use point to point on Mooseback or something. Some sort of maple based delivery system.
Maybe data 20 rates.
Maple bits, 50 maple bits per second. Maybe that's what it is. It's not actually megabits.
Oh, that would make more sense.
I love Canada. I kid.
But hopefully we will see some good internet in our future, or in Canada's future. Maybe there's some trickle down from that point of view, especially if it's maple. That does trickle down. That's how that works.
But, nah.
But speaking of the future, let's move on to a future that we can all agree on: Star Trek. The tricorder, one of the kind of interesting fun gadgets from even the original series Star Trek, small handheld super science diagnosis tool, that ideally is wireless and makes all sorts of cool sounds when you use it. It's not just a pipe dream. There was actually an XPRIZE that was designated for the tricorder, and there are a number of prototypes that are going into design and testing for tricorders. So the XPRIZE, I think it the first one was regarding what SpaceX essentially did, which was to launch a satellite or launch a rocket and then have it land. I don't think it was necessarily the Falcon 9 rocket that they had in mind, but they wanted a launch vehicle that could launch vertically and then land vertically. And so that was the one of the first XPRIZEs. And since then, a number of companies have signed on to encourage exploration and ideas in a lot of different technologies. And so this one is clearly, you know, Star Trek fans getting their due, and they want to make a wireless sensing device that could be used like a tricorder is on Star Trek. Totally a thing. I think so many things from Star Trek have informed technology. I mean, it now everyone has smartphones that are glass, but it wasn't that long ago that they were all flip phones, and everyone was like, "Oh yeah, that came from Star Trek. That's what they were doing." I will point out though that there is a company that I think is selling on via ThinkGeek, but also direct, but their whole thing is making props that are like Star Trek props, and except they work. So they made a original series communicator with the little flip up antenna that's a essentially a Bluetooth handset for your phone. Brilliant. Except for the part where you're carrying both your phone and then this, like, you know, Star Trek gadget, which it might appear to be a little try hard, but it's still really neat.
More Star Trek makes the world a better place.
I almost got the phaser replica that's a remote control. Pretty cool, but I know that they are also looking to make a comm badge, a next generation style comm badge that is a Bluetooth, speaker and microphone, which I think that's the natural extension of that technology. I do think Star Trek technologies should be investigated. I like that they're picking the tricorder. That's a good thing that actually has practical applications. But I think they got to work on matter teleportation. If there's anything that I don't want, I am, you know, full disclosure, starting a new job next week. Hooray. The only thing that I'm not looking forward to is commuting again. If they can work out matter teleportation, doesn't matter where I work, let's just do it. Although I don't think I want to be first mouse on that one. We're gonna let other things be teleported before
like actual mice.
Yeah. Or whatever, right? Just maybe not make the jump from like tennis balls to people, you know.
I don't think we have to worry about that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll move on to something, you know, a little closer in the future. Some researchers are saying that by 2020, they can get the price of solar down to 10 megawatts per hour. $10 per megawatt hour of electricity, which is real good. I mean, that would wipe out my electrical bill every month, essentially. if we could get that much solar power. I think what's happening is it's getting to the point where solar and then renewable power in general are beginning to put more pressure on fossil fuel generated power. There was a lot of talk over the course of the election about coal and oil jobs and manufacturing jobs, and a lot of those, as we talked about on the show, are more tied to the state of automation in a lot of those industries. I think in coal and gas, especially fossil fuels, it's not so much a manpower thing as it is a cost of power, per unit power. And it's not just the cost of, not the cost of materials, it's the cost of all of the labor that goes into it and everything else. And you can't cut that labor as fast as the sun can throw energy at us, essentially. So as solar cells get more efficient and we get more innovative about where to put solar and other renewable energy sources, that the price of that is going to be more attractive than paying for, essentially a dirty system that is coal or gas or what have you. It really will be interesting to see how that unfolds, and also hopefully will become something that is kind of obvious, at least from a money-making point of view, that using those technologies makes sense, and protecting those investments, which by way of you will be protecting the environment, makes more sense. I feel like that business case is not brought up enough as a way to motivate people towards it. It isn't necessarily being a hippie and trying to save the planet. It's you're investing in a source of energy that actually gets better as you invest in it. So it seems like an area for growth, something that hopefully will be protected and not too exploited. And then hopefully we will also not destroy the earth in the process, either by greenhouse gases and destroying the environment that way, or nuclear war, which would also suck.
We're on the razor's edge, Alan. The clock is ticking ever closer to midnight.
There is another story in the solar vein here. I think in France, the first solar roadway is cleared to be built, or has a stretch of it been built already? They have prototyped a stretch of road where instead of using asphalt and concrete and whatever else they use to make roads, they're using synthetic materials and plastics and glass to make a surface that will also generate electricity using solar power. So they're essentially turning roads, which are all over the place and just sit out most of the time with cars on them, but then also they are out just kind of surface area that has essentially one use, and we're going to give it another use. Let's give it the burden of producing energy, and it seems like a really interesting idea. I don't know where the cost makes sense, because it does have to be something.
It doesn't. So they've looked at doing this in the U.S.
Uh huh.
And they said it would work out to about $416 per square foot.
Oh.
And with the 29,000 square miles of paved roads in the lower 48, that would cost $330 trillion.
Wow.
Which is 16 times the U.S. national debt.
So it's not happening. So not a thing. Not a thing. No. Solar roadways, maybe not a thing.
Unless they can make it cheaper. No.
Yeah. And in theory, that, like I said, the technology is getting cheaper, although that isn't necessarily the technology, for having road-based solar. There's certainly a lot of other ways to generate electricity using roads. I remember seeing a thing saying that you could use even just the pressure of the cars driving over the road could be, you know, potentially harnessed into something electrical.
I think the best part about the article that you sent me about this was at the end, the author said that they should not waste their time on this and should spend their efforts trying to build a Dyson sphere.
That would be awesome also. I'm not sure it's a even exchange of ideas, but I would just like roads that, you know, aren't so falling apart. That would be great, actually. There's a number of roads, you know, getting back to, you know, the commute I'm not looking forward to. There are a number of roads in the area that have certainly gotten worse in the last, even just the last year. And it would be real nice if we spent a little money on infrastructure. Doesn't have to be solar powered roads. I would be happy with just roads that are, you know, flat and don't have
made of road
crazy potholes in them that make my car like really, really jump when I fall into them. But speaking of roads, we're going to move over kind of into spoiler territory, or actually directly into spoiler territory, somewhere we haven't been in a little while. We tried to go there last week, or last time we recorded, but we had a bit of a technical difficulty, like I had talked about in the past. But this time we're all good to go, and the roads that we're going to go down to are the roads in LA, as we jump into talking about movies, and a movie that we both saw, La La Land. I saw it, I think it was yesterday, and it starts with, you know, a traffic jam, and it bursts into song, and it's exactly what it is. It's a musical, and I really liked it.
It's great.
It's,
I don't even like musicals, and I liked it.
It's really interesting, and I was talking with someone about this because they were talking about what the difference was between a musical and an opera, and the short form on it is an opera is really based around the singing and the ability of the players to sing, and the story is kind of secondary, whereas in a musical the story is really first, but the method that it's told is often through songs and dance especially. And I think this really fits the musical genre much more than like what I consider like kind of the kind of cornerstone movie musicals, like especially the big ones of the last few years, like, you know, Chicago or I'm sure I can think of another one.
That's less than 10 years old.
Yeah, right. So not one that's, it has been a while since there's been a musical that I think was not based around pop songs, right? I mean, it's not right. Pitch Perfect. It's very much a, we're using songs that are naturally, or rather not naturally, kind of built into the flow of the movie, where there might be like a music cue, or there might be kind of a theme that's played underneath. Instead, that's brought to the front, and then the characters are, you know, in it and reacting with it. It's a much more kind of old school musical kind of feel.
And it's the same writer director as Whiplash,
yeah,
which was one of my favorite movies of the year that came out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting that this movie he actually wanted to do first, but couldn't get it made until he made Whiplash. And then people were like, oh, we'll give you money to make this movie you want to make. And a lot of the themes that were in Whiplash are the same in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like Whiplash was a very dark and intense movie, and this was a lot more light, but it still was looking at those same themes of people dealing with their, trying to achieve their dreams, and how that affects their relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that the, when I said, you know, the musical is told through kind of songs and dance, I would say it's more it's more than 50%, I think, dance than it is song. I mean, there are some key songs where the main, you know, actors and actresses do break into song, but I think it's more based around the music and the theme that way. Similarly to how, you know, Whiplash had the, you know, just the music in that really as a storytelling element, it was much more in the foreground in La La Land. I think it's really interesting. I think if there's one complaint, it's that the back half of the movie has essentially just like one song in it that has singing. So you don't really end the movie with like a song to, you know, a song running through your head on your way out, which I usually feel like I do with musicals that I love. I am a big fan of musicals, if it hasn't come out already on the show. I saw this
like 2 weeks ago now, or a week ago, and I have had the music stuck in my head ever since.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that I actually bought the soundtrack.
Yes, I should do that, actually.
It's really good.
So I learned that there is a soundtrack and a score for La La Land.
I bought them both.
And on in the Amazon review for the score, someone went through and reordered them all. So it's the order they appear in the movie. I highly recommend checking that out if you want the things to line up, because I know there are a few overlaps between the soundtrack and the score, and I think that that's a really good idea for a playlist, to essentially just recreate the flow of that of that thematically. But in any case, musicals I think are a thing. It also means that the director, he got the green light to do the Neil Armstrong biopic,
yeah, with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. Although this will be the first thing that he has not written. This is the first movie that he's directed that he's not written. So that's...
There were a lot of elements of this that just... I really like his filmmaking style.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that the cinematography was done really well, too. I mean, for a... I think it's hard for a musical, especially to... especially one that started on the stage, to really... make sense as something that you build, because you sort of have to recreate things that are you know, staged, but then you obviously want them to make them bigger because it's a movie and you can do a lot more things, whereas you know you don't want to recreate just someone sitting in a seat. And I think they really did that. I mean, so many of the shots I think only make sense in a movie context. Like, I think it would be difficult to try and stage this, so I don't think there'll be any high school versions of this running around. Let's hope not, anyway. Let's move over. Another movie that I saw a couple days ago was Assassin's Creed. And I think we were all kind of cautiously optimistic about it. I think it had a lot of good potential, being a game franchise that had kind of a lot of games behind it. I think at least six, maybe even more than that. And it had some good people attached to it. Jeremy Irons as a very scene-chewing bad guy, and Marianne Cotillard as a scientist, and Fassbender. It's like, oh my god, of course, okay, all right, I'm on board. And then it ended up being terrible. So I'm just gonna throw it out that if you've played the Assassin's Creed games, you know how weird and convoluted the storyline is, and they make no attempt to make that better.
I would like to point out that the budget for Assassin's Creed was $125 million. It's so far made $42 million.
Oh.
The budget for La La Land was $30 million, and it's made almost $40.
Okay. I think they're different movies, and I think there's a place for both. I just think that the Assassin's Creed movie was not made as well. It makes a lot of the same mistakes that the games make from a storytelling point of view, The main one for me is that it's meant to be that you're kind of in two timelines. You're in the modern timeline, and then you're in the timeline of the, you know, supposed genetic ancestor that they're visiting, and that's where all the action happens. Unfortunately, in the movie, they spend a whole lot of time in modern time, and if you've played the games at all, you know that's not why people play the games. They play the games to crawl around on, like, buildings in, you know, colonial America, or, you know, the towers in Jerusalem, or the, you know, buildings in London, and, like, jump down and shank people and free run. And there's a surprisingly low amount of that in a movie that is based on that franchise. So
It did give birth to one of the harshest reviews I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
The one of the best quotes I've seen for a harsh review. So this is from a critic at the Daily Telegraph. He said, "For everyone who thought Dan Brown's conspiracy novels were just lacking a spot of parkour, Assassin's Creed might be your favorite film of the year. But for the clinically sane 99.9% of the rest of us, it's rather less exciting." That's cold-blooded.
I think Kotaku, which is a, you know, gaming website, they describe their review as what we didn't like and what we really didn't like about the Assassin's Creed movie. So, yeah. I'd stick with the critics on this one, and maybe I think it was still kind of fun to watch, but not a not a franchise builder at all. I think it takes itself way too seriously. It could have been kind of a good B movie popcorn flick, like I feel like Underworld was the first one. I've actually not seen past the I don't even know what number it is.
I think I saw the first three.
There's apparently another one coming out next week. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, no, I knew that was coming, and I'll be skipping it.
But yeah, I think a franchise like that, like Resident Evil, where it's like it that was a game movie, and the movies came out seemingly without connection to the games and were fun to watch, but not anything deeper than, you know, like, than something you would, you know, sit and eat popcorn with, and you can kind of laugh at it. And there was no humor in it at all. So there's nothing to kind of lighten the mood at all. So it takes itself way too seriously, and it just fails. So let's move to a movie that didn't fail, a movie that we actually haven't talked about and didn't talk about two shows ago or whenever show we were supposed to talk about it at, which is Star Wars Rogue One. I'm so pleased. Beyond pleased, actually. I think I didn't really walk into it with a lot of expectations. I mean, the trailer obviously hyped, you know, or the trailers obviously hyped it quite a bit.
Most of that didn't make it in the movie.
Yeah, ironically enough. It ended up being, you know, a slightly different movie than what the trailers were telling, but it was still real, real good. The immediate and visceral reaction to the end of the movie, and I don't think I'm spoiling it, is I want to watch the original trilogy again right now.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
I watched A New Hope, and it made it a better movie. This is what a prequel should be.
Right.
It should take an existing product, make it better, raise the stakes, mm-hmm. inform more towards it.
Yeah.
I loved it. The last 40 minutes of the movie mm-hmm. were the Star Wars movie I'd wanted to see since I was 5. It was me playing with my Legos in the backyard.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. Every, I had a fair amount of Star Wars toys when I was growing up. It was, you know, right on the cusp of that and G.I. Joe. And so there were a lot of crossover battles, shall we say, between the Star Wars characters and G.I. Joe. And I think back to how we would play those, and it was always a lot more ground war based. I mean, I just didn't have the X-Wings or even the planes of, you know, of the toys at the time. They were just too big, and so I had a lot of figures, and then I would make my own little landing craft or whatever out of Lego necessarily, but it was much more of like a ground war, and that's what this was. It was just you're in the thick of it the whole time. I mean, there is a lot of flying, and I did appreciate, you know, all the X-wing time that we got, but
so much.
But a lot of it was that kind of dirty ground war that you got at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back with Hoth, and that was really the only time where it felt like the stakes were really live, because every other incarnation of a ground war in a Star Wars movie was like completely CG, and there's nothing that is real happening.
Battle of Endor.
Okay, fair. Yeah, no. I was skewing prequels is what I was doing.
I don't know what you're talking about, Alan.
Not a thing. But yeah, I think this Star Wars movie did a really great job of being a prequel, but B, really close in tone to how the trilogy, was. Whereas a lot of the complaints about the prequel trilogy, I mean, there were a lot of complaints, but one of them was that it makes the original trilogy look weird, like it's too slick. And so that was the kind of forgiveness to redoctor and in a bunch of stuff to the original trilogy to kind of dress it up to make it feel more contemporary, which I think is a mistake. We've talked about that on the show a lot, about, keeping
them. We don't need to talk about that.
Keeping them in the time. And I think they did a really great job of keeping it in the time. I think one of my favorite reviews pointed out that, like, almost everyone, all of the male characters have mustaches, because that's how it was in the 70s when they made that movie, when they made Star Wars. So it's like, yes, give them the look of what the folks look like. And I thought they did a great job of incorporating elements of the of A New Hope into it, or even, what is it, unfilmed elements of A New Hope. Like, so it's not that much of a spoiler, but like during the X-Wing battles, they had footage of Red Leader for the X-Wings and Gold Leader from the Y-Wings that they were able to splice in. And these were supposedly found by Gareth Edwards. He's just rooting around in the Lucas vaults about, unused footage from A New Hope that they just, doctored a little bit and spliced in. And it looked great. And it provides a continuity between this movie and A New Hope, which I think is really well done. There is a little more doctoring going on with a couple other characters, which I think was only distracting because I know how they did it.
Right. And I don't want to spoil this movie for anyone.
No.
Like,
no.
Go see it.
Yeah.
It does all the things you want it to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Assuming you've seen Star Wars. So this is the thing.
Assuming you're a fan of Star, if you're not a fan of Star Wars, it's going to be whatever. Well, but if you're a fan of the trilogy,
yeah.
And you know what? This really, I think, puts The Force Awakens in a weaker light.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a better Star Wars movie than The Force Awakens was.
I agree.
Because it banks on nostalgia, but not in the same way.
Yeah.
It pays tribute to that, mm-hmm. rather than, making that the focus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was good. I got to see it again.
I have seen it 3 times.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, there's still some time to go see that and talk about a bunch of other stuff in the weeks ahead when we get the Backtune in Review episode. I think this is pretty much as late as we could get for our last episode of the year. Well, we could have recorded tomorrow, I guess, but this will be released effectively.
It's also probably the latest we've actually recorded. It's now almost 11:40.
But totally worth it.
Pumpkins on the air.
Totally worth it. So I'm really glad we were able to record, you know, and have both sides of the conversation on. So
we'll find out.
that's just a win for me, at least. But we're looking forward to more shows in 2017. If you'd like to be a part of any of those shows in any way, by, you know, sponsoring, being a guest, contributing some ideas, do what you can on Twitter, Facebook, the notathingpodcast.com website. Go and leave a couple comments in the show notes where we'll post all of the links to the stories that we talk about every week, and generally keep being a fan of the show. Thanks for everyone that's listened in 2016. It's been a fun time. We still have a couple days to go, so cross your fingers.
We're gonna make it.
Almost
it, everybody. There.
Brennan, hopefully I will talk to you next week.
Until next time, Alan.